The Strait of Hormuz was already the center of the Iran war. Now it is becoming the test of whether the war can end at all. 3 days ago, in episode 101, we covered the May 7th clash in the Strait. CENTCOM's account of Iranian missiles, drones, and small boats targeting three American destroyers, Iran's counterclaim that the United States violated the ceasefire first, and the larger sovereignty fight over who gets to decide what lawful passage through Hormuz means. Tonight, the story has moved. Not away from the water, deeper into it. President Trump says Iran's response to the latest American proposal is, quote, totally unacceptable. Iran says it wants an immediate end to the war, a halt to the American naval blockade, and guarantees against further attacks. Israel says Iran's enriched uranium stockpile still has to be taken out before this war can be considered over. South Korea says a Korean-operated cargo ship was struck by unidentified objects in Hormuz, and Trump is now heading toward a meeting with Xi Jinping where Iranian oil and China's leverage may become part of the battlefield. This is The Synthetic Lens. I'm David Carver. With me, Elena Vasquez on the diplomacy, James O'Coffer on the military and maritime risk, Ingrid Halvorsen on energy and Europe, and Priya Sharma on China, Iran, and the Asian stakes. Elena, start with a diplomatic breakpoint. What happened today?
The cleanest, verified headline is that Trump rejected Iran's response to a U.S. proposal to end the war. BBC and CBS both report the quote from Truth Social. He said he had read the response from Iran's so-called representatives, did not like it, and called it totally unacceptable.
Do we know what Iran actually proposed?
We have partial reporting, and it has to be treated carefully. BBC cites Iran's semi-official Tasnim news agency, saying Tehran's proposal was sent through Pakistan, which has been serving as a mediator. According to that account, Iran wants an immediate end to the war on all fronts, a halt to the U.S. naval blockade, and guarantees of no further attacks on Iran.
Which sounds simple until you ask what each side means by end.
Exactly. For Iran, ending the war appears to mean stopping attacks, stopping blockade pressure, and restoring a measure of sovereignty over its ports and the Strait of Hormuz. For Washington and Israel, the question is not only whether missiles stop flying. It is whether Iran's nuclear and military position changes enough that they can claim the war achieved something.
Host Netanyahu sharpened that point.
He did. BBC reports that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium must be, quote, taken out, and that enrichment sites still have to be dismantled before the war against Iran can be considered over. That is the hard wall in the talks. Iran wants security guarantees and an end to blockade pressure. Israel is saying the nuclear infrastructure problem is not resolved. The United States is trying to translate both into a proposal Tehran can accept. Today, Trump said Tehran's answer was not acceptable.
So the ceasefire is not the same thing as settlement?
Not even close. BBC describes a ceasefire meant to facilitate talks as largely observed despite occasional exchanges of fire. But largely observed is not stable. It is more like a bridge. Everyone is still shooting there.
James, bring us back to the water. The last episode was about warships and a transit through Hormuz. What is the military picture now?
The military picture is that Hormuz remains both battlefield and bargaining chip. The United States is enforcing blockade pressure against Iranian ports. Iran is trying to show that it can make passage through the strait conditional, dangerous, or politically expensive. CBS reports that the Iranian Revolutionary Guards threaten to target U.S. sites in the Middle East if Iranian tankers come under fire. CBS also says that threat followed U.S. military forces firing on two Iran-flagged oil tankers to stop them from docking at an Iranian port in violation of the blockade.
That is escalation logic in a sentence.
Yes. The United States says blockade enforcement is pressure to bring Tehran to terms. Iran says interference with its tankers is an attack. Each side is trying to frame the same maritime act as either lawful pressure or unlawful aggression.
And then we have the South Korean ship.
We need to handle that with discipline. Al Jazeera reports that South Korea is investigating a May 4th incident in which two unidentified objects struck a Korean-operated cargo ship in the Strait of Hormuz, causing a fire and damage to the vessel's stern. Channel News Asia also reported the South Korean ministry statement describing a ship in the Strait of Hormuz hit by an unidentified object. The key word is unidentified.
Meaning not attributed.
Exactly. Not attributed, not explained, not aliens, not proof of Iranian action, not proof of U.S. action, not proof of a drone, unless investigators say so. In a war zone with drones, missiles, debris, mines, naval gunfire, and spoofed narratives, unidentified object is a placeholder, not a conclusion.
But the incident matters even before attribution.
It matters because shipping risk is psychological as much as physical. A vessel does not have to sink for insurers, shipping companies, and governments to reconsider routes. A fire and stern damage on a Korean-operated ship, with origin unclear, tells every commercial operator that the risk environment is not contained to American warships or Iranian vessels.
That is the broader Hormuz problem. Commercial shipping becomes part of the signal.
Right. If commercial operators believe the strait is unsafe, the strait is functionally constrained, even before anyone formally closes it. That is the power of ambiguity in maritime conflict.
Host Ingrid, markets respond to ambiguity too. What is the economic pressure here?
The economic pressure is that Hormuz is not just a place on a map. It is a pricing mechanism. BBC notes that Iran's continued disruption and restriction of traffic through the strait has contributed to a rise in world oil prices, and that around a fifth of the world's oil and natural gas normally moves through that route. When traffic largely stops, the world does not wait for a peace treaty to reprice risk.
So every diplomatic statement is also an energy statement.
Yes, Trump rejecting Iran's response is not just a political headline. It tells markets that the path to reopening Hormuz is still uncertain. Netanyahu's comments about enriched uranium tell markets that even a ceasefire framework may not satisfy Israel. Iran's warnings to vessels tell markets that passage may depend on rules Tehran wants to impose. And European naval discussions tell markets that outside powers may be preparing a security architecture that Iran rejects.
BBC reported movement from Britain and France.
Britain is sending a warship to the Middle East, according to BBC, potentially to join an international mission to safeguard shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. But Prime Minister Keir Starmer has said such a mission would take place once fighting ends. France, according to the same BBC report, is being careful with language. Macron said France had never envisaged a naval deployment in the sense Iran warned against, but rather a security mission coordinated with Iran.
That is a narrow diplomatic ledge.
Very narrow. Europe wants shipping security without creating the impression of joining an anti-Iran naval operation during an active war. Iran has warned of a decisive and immediate response to French or British deployments in the strait. So Europe is trying to design a mission that reassures shipping, satisfies Washington, avoids humiliating Tehran, and does not get shot at.
Easy afternoon.
Quite. Perhaps they can also solve the Eurozone over lunch.
Host Priya, the story now moves to Beijing. Why is China suddenly central?
China was always central. It is just becoming explicit. Al Jazeera, citing officials and wire reporting, says Trump is set to arrive in Beijing and discuss the Iran war with Xi Jinping. The reported pressure point is China's purchase of Iranian oil and potentially dual-use goods. Al Jazeera quotes Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent saying China buys 90% of Iran's energy and is therefore funding Iran. Reuters linked reporting has separately attributed to Bessent the narrower claim that China buys more than 90% of Iranian oil exports. Those are U.S. claims, but they explain the pressure point Washington is bringing to Beijing.
Beijing does not accept Washington's sanctions framework.
Correct. Al Jazeera notes that China says it wants the war to end, hosted Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi last week, and refuses to recognize Washington's unilateral sanctions on Iran's oil sector. That is the strategic problem for Trump. A blockade can pressure Iran, but if China remains a major buyer, Iran's economic oxygen is not fully cut off.
So Trump's China meeting becomes part of the Iran negotiation.
Yes. There are really two negotiations now. One is with Iran over war termination, nuclear limits, sanctions, and Hormuz. The other is with China over whether Beijing helps squeeze Tehran or shields it. China can present itself as a responsible stabilizer while still resisting U.S. sanctions and protecting its energy interests.
And for Beijing, this is leverage.
Enormous leverage. China can tell Washington, if you want help ending the Iran war, we need concessions somewhere else. Trade, technology controls, Taiwan temperature, tariffs, financial restrictions. Maybe not publicly, but great powers do not waste leverage.
Elena, come back in. If the U.S. proposal is rejected and China is now part of the conversation, where does the peace track stand?
Fragile. But not dead. That distinction matters. CBS reports Qatar's prime minister was in Miami and spoke with Steve Witkoff, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and Vice President J.D. Vance, with Iran war diplomacy on the table. BBC reports Pakistan carried Iran's response. Al Jazeera reports China is now in the conversation. That means there are channels. The question is whether any channel can bridge the core contradiction.
State that contradiction plainly.
Iran wants the war and blockade pressure to stop before it gives up strategic leverage. Washington and Israel want Iran to give up strategic leverage before they stop the pressure. That is the loop.
And while that loop continues, every ship in Hormuz becomes a potential message.
James, what are the escalation indicators you would watch over the next 24 to 48 hours?
First, attribution on the South Korean vessel incident. If investigators identify debris or launch origin, that could widen the circle of states demanding action. Second, any new U.S. blockade enforcement against Iranian tankers. CBS already reports the IRGC threatening U.S. sites if tankers are fired on. Third, whether Iran interferes with a vessel from a U.S.-aligned state, especially Britain, France, South Korea, Japan, or a Gulf monarchy. Fourth, European naval movement. If Britain or France transitions from preparing to operating, Tehran's response matters. Fifth, official CENTCOM statements. If the U.S. military starts naming new strikes, targets, or defensive actions, that tells us the ceasefire is becoming less meaningful.
Host Ingrid, what would you watch economically?
Insurance rates, tanker queues, LNG movements, and whether Asian buyers begin rerouting or delaying cargoes. Oil price matters, but shipping behavior is often the cleaner signal. If ships wait, divert, or demand war risk premiums, the strait is not normal, no matter what diplomats say.
Priya?
Chinese language. If Beijing says it supports peace but condemns U.S. sanctions and blockade policy, it is giving Tehran diplomatic space. If Beijing calls on Iran to reopen Hormuz without equally condemning Washington, that is a shift. Also watch whether China reduces purchases in any visible way. Statements matter. Cargo flows matter more.
And if China does move?
Then this stops being only a Middle East negotiation and becomes a test of whether Washington can still make its sanctions architecture global. Beijing does not have to endorse Iran to protect its own freedom of action. That is what makes the Xi meeting so consequential.
Host, final political read.
Trump's totally unacceptable post narrows his room. Public rejection creates pressure to either force a better deal or escalate. Iran's public posture also narrows its room. Pezeshkian saying Iran will not bow before the enemy is not a technical negotiating point. It is domestic survival language. Netanyahu's uranium demand narrows Israel's room. Everyone is speaking to their own audience while asking mediators to build a compromise backstage.
That may be the most dangerous version of diplomacy.
public absolutes, private bargaining, and live weapons in the water.
Exactly.
So where does this leave us tonight? First, the war is not over. The ceasefire framework is still alive enough for diplomacy, but too fragile to reassure shipping or markets. Second, Hormuz is no longer just the site of a clash. It is the enforcement mechanism. Iran uses the strait to make the world feel the cost of pressure. The United States uses blockade enforcement to make Iran feel the cost of refusal. Commercial ships are caught between those logics. Third, China is now unavoidable. If Beijing keeps buying Iranian oil, Washington's pressure campaign leaks. If Beijing helps restrain Tehran, it will expect something in return. The Iran war is becoming a U.S.-China negotiation by another name. Fourth, the South Korean ship incident is a warning about uncertainty. We do not know who or what struck that vessel. That is the point. In a crowded maritime war zone, uncertainty itself changes behavior. And finally, not every alert deserves a microphone. Earlier today, a separate North Korean nuclear dead man switch alert circulated without corroboration from primary or reputable sources. We are not building tonight's episode around that, because due diligence is not optional. The real story is already serious enough.
The Strait of Hormuz is the place where energy, war, diplomacy, and great power leverage all pass through the same narrow lane. Tonight, that lane is still contested, and every side is claiming it wants the war to end on terms the others may not be able to accept. This has been The Synthetic Lens. I'm David Carver. We'll keep watching the water.